Welcome to the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Dubay. For context, this podcast is inspired by the book Entrepreneurial Leap by Gino Wickman. Gino is the founder of EOS Worldwide and an author with over 2 million copies of his books sold worldwide. Now, in his next phase, he is taking his passion for helping entrepreneurs by partnering with five equally passionate, successful entrepreneurs, myself included, who have created the eLeap Academy, where we teach the content from the book in a one-year program guaranteed to increase the success of early-stage businesses. Now, a quick note about me. I've been an entrepreneur since the age of 14 when I started my first business selling blow pop lollipops out of my locker with my best friend. I ran a company that I sold to a public company and later bought back. I'm an author, speaker, host of an annual leadership retreat, and I'm partners in several other businesses. I'll be your host for the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast, where every other week, you will be hearing life stories from successful entrepreneurs who took the leap into entrepreneurship. You will learn from their mistakes and successes and be inspired as you move forward on your journey. Now, before I introduce my guest, I'm going to share with you a bit about eLeap Academy. The Entrepreneurial Leap Academy provides an immersive 9-month experience for new entrepreneurs with a focus on the three C's: clarity, confidence, and community. Let's start with the first C, clarity. You will learn to be clear about who you are, what you want from your business, and how to get it. The next C, confidence. You will learn to be confident you're on the right path, equipped with powerful mindset tools. The last C, connected. You will become connected to a community of entrepreneurs just like you. Now, all participants receive 4 full-day in-person classes led by experienced entrepreneurs to equip you with the tools and strategies necessary to build a successful business. The Academy's dynamic community connects participants with a tribe of like-minded individuals for support and networking opportunities during and between classes. Students also receive a seasoned mentor offering personalized guidance and expertise to help you navigate the challenges of entrepreneurship. To start building the business of your dreams, visit our website at e-leap.com. Again, that's e-leap.com. There you can learn more about and sign up for the next Entrepreneurial Leap Academy. Today's guest is Jacob Emery. Fresh out of high school, for $9 an hour with a shovel in his hand, Jacob began his career at R&R Pipeline. After a few years of struggling, he reinvented himself and became a crew leader by 22, operations manager by 26, and owner by 30. Since purchasing R&R Pipeline, he's ventured into other businesses and is a shareholder of Max Effort Muscle, helped to start up CrossFit Uprising, and recently started a new adventure with the Iron and Infrastructure LLC, which will host his soon-to-come Iron and Infrastructure podcast and publish his book, The Pipeline to Prosperity. Jacob is a down-to-earth true visionary. There are so many nuggets of wisdom during my chat with him. You're going to absolutely love it. So please enjoy my chat with Jacob Emery. Jacob, welcome to the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast. I am so grateful for your time today. Thanks for doing this with me.
I appreciate you having me on, Rob. I'm really excited. I've been looking forward to this.
This is a treat, okay, because I've done some research. the listeners are going to love hearing your story. It really is amazing. And I want to jump right into it. I don't want to spend time on anything else. I want to get right into it. So can you talk a little bit about your trajectory from where you came from to becoming owner, CEO of R&R Pipeline.
So in high school, I graduated high school in 2007. And throughout high school, I never really had a group of friends. I was kind of an outlier, got in a lot of trouble, and I was a misfit. And I never did good in school at all. I never paid attention. I didn't like authority. And I just always had assumed that my life was not going very far because of the amount of trouble. I didn't like to listen. I was going to go to college, and then, you know, I wanted to do a 2-year degree at Ohio State for business management. And then, you know, going into graduation season, I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to go spend $20,000 or $30,000 a year for college when I don't even want to go to high school and this is coming out of my pocket. So I just decided to forego that. I had worked at R&R Pipeline through the summer, you know, between my sophomore and junior year and whatnot, after school. And, you know, I worked after school, weekends, whatever I had to do, whatever was available. So I went into the workforce. So 2007, I went to start at R&R Pipeline with a shovel in my hand for $9 an hour. And that's where I kind of started my journey. So I was out of town a lot, traveling. I was on the road 5 or 6 days a week, living out of a hotel. And I went from a kid that had no direction to a kid that had a bad direction because I was around a bunch of old school, unhealthy, drink every night pipeliners. And it didn't take long for me to realize that lifestyle wasn't for me. Growing up, I had always been into fitness. So probably 13 years old, I really started working out because I was a fat kid growing up. You know, I was always made fun of for being heavy, and it was just a pain point for me. So I went to the weights, you know, to overcome that. And it was an insecurity of mine up until probably honestly just a few years ago, where it was always in the back of my head, you know, this pain point. So as I'm coming up through the, you know, the ranks at R&R, I wasn't really applying myself. I got laid off one winter, and I was at a gym that I now am part of a supplement company with, and the old school gym. And my first true mentor and one of my best friends now, Corey Gregory, comes up to me, and he knew that I was laid off work. I was spending about 4 or 5 hours at the gym training, so I wasn't getting in trouble. So I was actually applying myself in a good area. And he comes up to me and said, "Man, what the hell are you doing with your life?" And it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. And I remember I was sitting on a tractor tire, just got done working out. I'm absolutely exhausted. And I had my head down, you know, covering my head up with my hands. And I'm just completely beat. And he said that, and it lit a fire under me at the time that I had no idea what a catapult to what it did. And about a year later, you know, I completely changed my outlook on life, turned my life around, and started really to apply myself. So I went from that $9 an hour in 2007 to probably 2011. I was about 22 years old. I was running crews. So I became a foreman, had 4 or 5 people under me to start, all
back,
older than
back
me.
At R&R Pipeline?
At R&R Pipeline, yeah. So I ended up going back to R&R, you know, after the winter layoff season. We used to be kind of a seasonal company. And after that, you know, I went into what I knew, right? I grew up in a construction pipeline workforce that is ruthless, cutthroat. I do everything. I don't have a team. It's all about the one guy. It's, you know, very cowboy, pride-driven. And that's all I knew. So I led that way with an iron fist. And I was probably 22 or 23, and a Friday afternoon, we're getting ready to leave town. And middle of winter, have a nasty storm coming in. I'm pushing everyone way too hard that day. And I'm pushing them to the point they're being counterproductive. And I'm 6'3", 240 pounds, just for reference. And I had a 5'3", 140 pound soaking wet little man come up and just bark at me, pokes me right in the chest. He said, "But I'm here to tell you, if you don't like his speed, you're not going to like the next one. Let me do my damn job." And I just froze because I didn't know what to say. And I walked away, but I realized something at that point. He was right. I was making him slower by disrespecting him and pushing him the same way that I had been, you know, throughout the growth of the company. And I was like, this isn't the way to lead people. I need to lead with my action, not my words. You know, I need to show him how to get this done better if he doesn't know how, or allow patience to get the job done. Sometimes, you know, things just need to be seen all the way through. So I changed after that. And, that really like changed my leadership skill. So I started really applying myself with personal development at that same age. So instead of going out to the bar at night, like all the other guys, I would hop on a treadmill, walk on a treadmill. I listened to an audiobook for an hour or two. And it was probably that 23 to 24 time frame where I really started to separate myself. So I had an hour of, you know, travel time to a job site one way. So I would knock out audiobooks like crazy. And then I just started seeing a bigger vision of what could be. And I was probably about 23 or 24. And I just thought, man, if I can apply myself for a couple of years, it wasn't easy, but it wasn't that hard. And I surpassed, you know, at the time we were probably at 75 people on the team. And I surpassed majority of them in the field in 2 years. I'm like, if I can do that, I'm just going to buy the damn company by the time I'm 30. And there was no rhyme or reason why that came to mind. And there was no logical reason why it should have happened. Even now there isn't, but that's what happened. So I was determined by it. And I have a business partner now who was with about 4 years at the company at the beginning. And then he went to the Army for 4 years and served overseas for our country and then ended up coming back on leave. And I said, man, you got to come back. I think we can buy this damn company. And he's like, there's no way in hell I'm coming back. And we kind of worked through some details. And then sure enough, he came back and became the safety director. And a year later, I became the operations manager and we ran the company for 3 years. And then April 12th of 2018, we sat down with the owner at the time and said, hey, how much is R&R Pipeline worth? We're going to buy it. And he pretty much just laughed at us. But 407 days later, we were the ones laughing because we bought it.
So great.
Yeah.
First of all, why did you decide you wanted to buy the company?
Because I don't like authority, apparently. I couldn't see myself working for anybody else. And I never really understood. I would always tell my boss what should happen. You know, I would be told what to do. I'm like, you guys are underutilizing me and you're underutilizing this guy. And this guy that has this job and this position should not be doing it. So natural instinct for me was putting people in the right seats. It was really kind of a, you know, we have a 400-pound guy that's in a ditch with a shovel that's vastly overweight, who can operate equipment really well. And we're expecting him to get in this, you know, 12-inch ditch and shovel. You know, things just didn't sit right with me. And to this day, it's one of my favorite sayings, you know, we've always done it this way, or that's the way we've always done it. Anytime I hear that, I automatically look at what's being done and I want to see how that process is going. I want to see it from point A to point B all the way through, because more than likely it's not right.
Mm-hmm. How did you muster up the cash at that age to buy the company?
I have a really good attorney. So just to put it in perspective, we bought a multi-million dollar company. And the day that the last PFS I did, the last personal finance statement I did, my net worth was $37,000. And we borrowed multi-million dollars. Yeah. And we had a really good CPA firm and a really good attorney. The attorney is the one that really took a chance on us. We didn't pay him a dime until we closed. And we sat down with him, we told him our story, and he seen something in us that we couldn't see. He seen opportunity in us that was greater than what we were capable of believing was possible. And we know that now, obviously, and we're grateful for it. But he understood the temperature of the room of who me and my business partner Cody were and what we were willing to do and what we had done to get to the point we're at. And he knew it would work. We just had to get one bank to sign up for that deal. And I'm thankful that they did. And I look at it now and think, why in the hell did you do that? You know, just a little over $100,000 net worth between two, you know, 30-year-olds, and you're given a multi-million dollar loan to.
How many banks did you have to talk to?
All of them. So,
and how many is that?
Probably 20 or so. And we actually had one bank that had a commitment letter from, and they dropped us probably 2 weeks out from closing. And we had to start the whole entire process over again. But it was the best education I think I've ever had. And we became so callous to business in general that what would, you know, be seemingly a tough, you know, really hard business situation really isn't that difficult anymore. It's more, you know, address it for a couple minutes and then let's just figure out a solution, move forward. Mm-hmm. Because what we went through to get there, it was such a roller coaster.
Did the owner at the time want to sell to the two of you, or did this person want to go to market and see if, you know, he could, you know, maximize the price?
So when we sat down with him, you know, we told him, hey, we want to buy R&R Pipeline. He he pretty much laughed. I mean, he really didn't believe that we could do it. But I had known him for quite a long time. I played basketball with him, you know, outside of work. And he was a friend to me, almost, you know, father figure of some sort. So I knew him for a long time. But that doesn't mean that he cares enough, you know, to – he gave us an opportunity, but money talks.
Yeah.
The only thing that we did have in our advantage is the company really wasn't ready to sell. So as we were running the company, we were also getting the company ready to sell behind the scenes. And we were able to expedite that instead of a third party coming and doing it. So we got the company ready to sell as we were running it and trying to buy it. So it was it was quite an interesting year and a half, to say the least. And we were doing things that were so out of our, you know, realm of running an operation. We were absolutely mind boggled by what we had to go through. But after we went through it, we understood all the layers that we hadn't seen before. At that point, we understood what it looked like.
And so you bought the company officially in what year was it, 2019?
2019, yeah. May of 2019.
So it's 4 years you've owned it now. And you went through a pandemic. What great timing. How was that?
Yeah, it was interesting to say the least. It actually worked out in our favor. You know, we're not a customer service restaurant industry. So the one thing it did was made us slow down because me and my business partner are very, you know, organically we're moving faster than we probably should. And we have a very low ceiling for our growth initiative because we've seen a lot of businesses in our industry take on way more they can chew and then fail. So they grow fast and fail faster. And then they have, you know, millions of dollars in assets that they are sitting on and, you know, bankruptcy and selling portion of the company. So we understood, hey, we're very young, we're 30, we don't know what we don't know. The one thing that we can't do is act like we know something we don't. We have to grow methodically and grow organically and not just, you know, triple in size overnight. With that said, you know, we tripled the EBITDA value in that 3 year time frame, 3.5 years, and doubled the revenue in the same time frame too. And that was with us going slow. So things have been fairly good. You know, the economy, the, you know, COVID economy, supply chain issues, we're still feeling the ripple effects of it. So, you know, if we get a break here in a year or two, you know, it's really going to be good for us because we'll understand what the difficult times look like.
And as you now look back in your early part when you were working and moving your way up and now now owning it, do you look at this business and say, this is the perfect business for me? And one of the things I was curious about is, you know, in researching, and also you mentioned at the outset, you obviously work out, you're in great shape, you own, you're part owner of a gym and a supplement company. And so I wondered, is R&R the perfect business for you? Or is a gym / supplement business the perfect business for you? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
So it's so interesting that you bring this up because I have lived in two completely different worlds my whole entire life. And the two of them have never merged up until about 6 months ago. So, you know, I was the guy that instead of going out and drinking beer all night, you know, on Tuesday for happy hour, if I didn't have a gym to go to, I would hook a pipe strap up to the truck and pull it through a parking lot to work out. You know, I went to great lengths. I remember, you know, nights when I would be boxing with another guy next to the pool, you know, on a rain day when guys come in, you know, hammered drunk from drinking all day. And I'm still working out by a pool. And don't get me wrong, I've had my fun too, you know, my share of fair fun. There's definitely been a lot of fun involved, but I just didn't want to be another guy that's doing the same thing. And the fitness background really came from that insecurity and that fear. I had a fear my whole entire life up until probably honestly a couple of years ago where I would have this dream that I'm getting on the school bus and I'm on the ground, I'm walking up the stairs and I turned to get on the school bus and my shirt was off and everyone's pointing at me making fun of me. And I had this nightmare up until I was probably, you know, 15 years old. And then being in front of people, speaking in front of people, terrified me. And we implemented an operating system at the beginning of this year. And even getting up and giving a 10 or 15 minute opening speech for that, like I still had a, you know, my heart was pounding, my hands are a little sweaty. And it's in front of 100 people that I know. And it was my story that I'm telling. Uh-huh. You know, so it was, them have been my two biggest fears in my whole life. And I've always been a fitness guy and I've always been in a blue collar construction industry.
Yeah.
So I kind of figured out I have a special little niche between two worlds and I can conquer my fears and I can merge the two worlds together to help other people because the way that I'm doing it's a lot different. but it's a lot better than the way that a lot of people in our industry do it. So, you know, I actually started a company a few months ago, about 6 months ago, called the Iron and Infrastructure LLC. And the Iron and Infrastructure is just what it sounds like. The iron is the wellness and fitness and building yourself, you know, physically. And infrastructure, you know, really building anything in society, but it's all about building yourself. So I'm going to talk a lot about weightlifting and what, how the parallel weightlifting and business kind of interact, because there's a lot of lessons that, you know, with injuries I've learned under the bar, you know, where I need to seek out medical advice or whatever it may be, that, you know, the same in business. You know, if I don't understand my taxes, I'm going to call my CPA and, you know, ask him what's going on. And if I don't understand why I have a pec injury, you know, I'm going to go to my rehab guy. So I started understanding the true dynamic of the two. And then, you know, the side effect of it really became this other business venture that has put me in my natural environment, where a construction industry is not very prone to have a creative, you know, environment.
Right.
And the supplement company that I'm a part of, Max Effort Muscle, everybody there is creative. They're all quick starts there, outside of like two of them and the editor and the COO. Outside of that, everyone else is a quick start. And I'm a quick start myself, but everyone at R&R Pipeline is in the 4 to 5 range, you know, very methodical process. You know, it takes time to make decisions, which is, you know, smart for a business. You don't want to overreact. And I always reference a top field dragster. You know, I live my life like a top field dragster. I'm going to go 350 mile an hour as fast as I can, but every once in a while I'm going to break down, I'm going to blow up, and I'm going to need rebuild. So with all that, I started a podcast, and it's going to be called Iron and Infrastructure Podcast. And I'm just going to talk about my journey and how I merged the two worlds together to achieve prosperity. So prosperity is one of our core values at R&R. It's a word that I've always, you know, enjoyed using, and to be successful or thriving, right? And that word alone has always kind of meant something to me. And so now I'm merging these two worlds together, and I don't know what's next, but I do feel like I am starting to be more in my natural habitat with both of them combining.
I love it. You mentioned one of your core values. How important have core values, identifying what they are and living them, been to the success of the company since you've been there?
So we just implemented the core values in January to everybody when we did a rollout meeting. And it's amazing how, you know, when you implement core values within a company, if you are truly honest and upfront and look at it from a personal perspective, as long you, personally, our core values align with the business and vice versa. So how I live my day-to-day life is how we operate the business. And me and my business partner, our leadership team, you know, we looked at all of them and we just thought, these are personal core values as much as they're professional core values. And so our core values are protect, perform, positivity, pride, and then prosperity. And they're all P's. They're all different than what your run-of-the-mill, you know, safety, quality. We deliver a similar message to the industry, but with different mindset involved, because it isn't just a professional core value, it's a lifestyle core value. And so whether I'm walking down the street on a date with my wife, or I'm going down the street looking at a pipeline project, it's the same core value, and I'm going to live it both ways. But they're very, very crucial to how we operate as a business, because you can get lost in the sauce sometimes and not understand what the situation could be on the ceiling side, but is it fit your core values? And when you assess a situation of that nature based off your core values, it's really takes out that gray area of being unsure.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier your partner at R&R, and then it sounds like you have partners at the gym and the supplement mm-hmm. business. So mm-hmm. I don't want to assume, but it sounds like you're a partner mm-hmm. person. And this is something that we encourage our early stage entrepreneurs mm-hmm. to consider. Are they a partner person? Because it's not easy being a partner. What are your thoughts on that? And why are you a partner person?
I thought about this, you know, from 22 to 30 years old of buying R&R Pipeline, and whether it's the reality or not, I always thought, man, I think I could do this on my own. But then I thought, what would I be sacrificing to try to do it on my own? So, you know, I have a wife, I have two girls, I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old daughter. And it's just like, what am I going to do to my family life if I have to do this on my own? And no one else cares about your business as much as the people that are in it, right? So I looked at it from that standpoint, and then I just don't know a whole lot, Rob. You know, I barely made it through high school. I took this leap of faith at, 28 years old to buy this company with no money. And what I figured out is I couldn't have done it without my attorney, my business partner. You know, I don't know that we could have done it without each other. And then our CPA, and then going to strategic coach. There's a lot of power in who you meet. And if I can open up my door and have a $10 million net worth in a couple of years, okay, that's something to be proud of. But if I can open up this other door and have freedom of $10 million and then $100 million net worth with, freedom of time, purpose, relationships, and it makes so much more sense to go far with other people to me. If I want to go fast, I go fast enough, in my day to day. I don't need to go fast by myself. I got, having that group of people is so powerful. I highly would recommend it to everybody, especially at a very young age, because there's a lot of stuff that a high skilled person doesn't know about business, but it's really eye opening whenever someone that's inexperienced in business goes into business and then has to figure out the hard way. Because I was one of them people, and I'm just thankful I have such a strong network of people I can rely on.
Amazing. It really is. It's such an early age, and especially, how you work your way up through the company. And I'm just speaking about R&R right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, one of the things that we talk about with these early stage entrepreneurs is this idea, which we've all heard, probably our whole life, is that you got to work hard, really hard. And, I remember as I was doing my research, something that I noticed and you alluded to earlier is that you would outwork everyone. You started off doing plumbing in houses and putting pipe in the ground. And then within 2 years, you were running crews. And then you were figuring how to do things smarter, which is obviously why you were moving up in the company. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if you can kind of speak to how you see the importance of hard work, especially in that early stage.
So it's pretty much a mathematical equation that the more you apply yourself to getting better, the more likely you are to get better. So that's the glaringly obvious thing. But just working hard doesn't mean that you're being smart about it. So I was raised in more of a prideful, just do it yourself. I would always take my truck to get the oil changed by somebody else for 20 bucks instead of spending 17 bucks or 18 bucks on parts and stuff to get it done in an hour or two of my time. To me, it didn't make sense, right? From a mathematical standpoint, if I have 2 hours, I can go generate a lot more revenue, even though I wasn't at that time, than a couple bucks. So I've seen a lot of guys work really hard, but just because you're working hard sometimes doesn't mean that you're doing it the right way or doing it efficiently. I've seen a lot of people work hard and run in circles for a day, and it just doesn't get anywhere. But when you can figure that out and understand, I'm probably not the smartest person in the room. If I am, I'm probably in the wrong room. How do I get in a room with smarter people than me and still apply a hard work ethic? So when I would work, 12 hours a day in the field, 2 or 3 hours of that was me going to the next level where I would, like, if I was an operator looking to be a foreman, I would be studying contracts. I would be studying timesheets and how to get to that foreman position. And then if I was a foreman, I would be, how do I be a project manager? What's the next step to get there? What is this guy doing that I'm not doing? And how can I do it better? And then the big thing that I think a lot of people miss on a situation like mine, I wanted to be a project manager as a foreman, but I know my value as a foreman was high at that time. So if I am not able to replace myself, then how am I going to take the next step? So when you're looking for the next opportunity, make sure, I always reference like a building of success. So you put a ladder up this building and you start climbing up the building and then you hit this one level of success. So I get up to this ledge of being a foreman, right? If I'm climbing up there by myself, I don't have anyone to pull, that's below me. I don't have anyone to pull up to get to that spot so I can climb up the next ladder just says. So when you're reaching up for help, always reach down and pull someone along with you to take your spot then. I always try to replace myself. That was kind of my rule of thumb is I'm going to train someone to replace myself because I want to go to the next step. And I'm not stopping on the next step until it's internship. So someone has to replace me.
And do you have that same mindset now since you're at the top?
I really do. It's just a evolution. Right now within our operating system, I'm the visionary of our company, but I don't know that I'll be the visionary that much longer. It might go to the next phase. Me and my business partner might be in the internship box in a couple of years. we are going into the growth phase in 2024 for the first time. And, you know, me and my business partner are still in too many seats for what we should be. So we still have a lot of room to grow. And we're, you know, we have never had a true sales and marketing team until this year. And we haven't even really had a true marketing team. We're just now really starting to get on the marketing side. I don't even know the basics of sales and marketing from a business standpoint of our nature. I understand it from the supplement side because that's what that company is. It's all marketing and branding to sell a supplement.
Right.
But for, you know, infrastructure company like our pipeline, we're just now starting to learn that. So it's the evolution and never stops. And there's always another opportunity. And a year ago, if I would have told you that I'm starting a podcast, writing a book, putting out a newsletter and doing all the other things that I'm doing, I would have said you're full of shit. But lo and behold, here we are.
Here we are. I love it. Yeah. You know, one of the things that Gino writes about in Entrepreneurial Leap is this idea of seeing it every night, which is essentially, you know, knowing where you're going and just seeing that. And I'm wondering, is that something that you were doing when you said all those years ago, I'm going to buy this company? Were you just seeing it every night or whatever your version of that is? And do you still do that?
I was 16 years old, leaving the high school that I went to, just little school just east of Columbus, Ohio. And I'll never forget this. At 16 years old, I hopped in my little beat up Ford Ranger. I fell asleep in class at the end of class and the bell woke me up, you know, and it's like, I go out to my truck, I'm leaving. And R&R Pipeline was digging in a natural gas pipeline down the hill by the school. And I'm leaving the school and I just had this eerie gut feeling. And I don't even know that I said out loud, and I did not repeat this for probably, I don't know, a good 12 or 15 years, but in my gut, in my head, my heart, I'm going to own this company one day. At 16 years old, that was kind of the first, and I didn't even recognize this until just a few months ago as an actual thing. I didn't really ever think about it after that, but R&R Pipeline had always kind of been something I was involved with. And I started to realize here recently, I started to kind of piece together my past. You know, everything that happens to us in our past, it shapes us for the present, and how we look at adversity and things that happened in the past makes us who we are today, whether good or bad. So I look at some of the things that happened in little moments of time that I had this vision, this thought, but it was so far put, like Elon Musk putting, you know, colonizing Mars. It was so far out there that it really was unbelievable to me, but it never went away. And now that I understand it, Rob, I'll tell you what, it's even worse because now I can't shut it off because I know. It's almost worse now because it's like, I'll wake up in the middle of the night. You know, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, almost every morning. The old school gym, I don't own any of it, but you know, that's the gym I'm affiliated with a supplement company. And we have what's called a 4 a.m. crew. So I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 or 5 days a week to go work out at 4 a.m. with a bunch of hardcore world record, you know, holders, ex-NFL players, a bunch of savages. And, you know, there's times I wake up at midnight after going to bed at 9 o'clock and I'm ready to go. I cannot shut it off. And it's not always a good thing. And recently with this new adventure, you know, I have this bigger picture vision, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road of what is possible. And then it compounds, you know, the compound effect of what's possible when it really starts evolving and catching, you know, momentum. It's hard to shut it off.
Amazing. I love it. You know, you talked
I understand exactly what Gino's saying. Yeah.
Yeah, you get it. You talked about going to a program called Strategic Coach, which is the, you know, top entrepreneurial coaching company in the world, founded by Dan Sullivan. And, you know, I also recognize that you listened to audiobooks when you were young. You know, you're always learning, learning, learning. So I'm wondering if you can talk about the importance of this for an early stage entrepreneur to capitalize on coaching, on training and mentoring.
So the number one expedition of your journey, you know, if you want to expedite your growth, learn from people that have done it. So all the pain points that I went through, I can reference a book that got me through it. But it took me years. Probably, Rob, you can probably attest to this. You probably had a lot of stuff that happened to you that it took you much longer than had someone guide you in the right direction. And so now I look at things that have happened and people around me and how I've been able to, you know, kind of return the favor to others. Strategic Coach has probably taken 10 years of pain points off my life. you know, I'm still very young, and but I still have my own pain points. Now I understand what's possible with a strong team and a strong network around you. Personal development is, you know, whether it's reading a book or mentorship, whatever it is, it's developing you as a person. And nothing is greater than the power of having someone that has been where you want to go and has experienced things that you're getting ready to experience or you're going through and knows how to get through them. The personal development is such a massive impact and such a personal thing. I recommend it to everybody in every phase. And the other thing about strategic coach, Rob, people don't understand who they are. Self-awareness is almost like a superpower sometimes, where I thought I knew who I was, but I take my Colby index, quick start. That makes sense, okay? Because I know that I can be, you know, kind of batshit crazy sometimes. So I understand the Colby. Well, then I understand the Clifton Strength Finder and the Prince Survey. And then I have other people around me do the same thing. And it's not that I'm right and they're wrong. It's just who we are. But understanding the power and natural instincts, unconscious motivators, what you're good at, what you're not good at, it's very, very powerful. And it has, even now, I still go back on them three different things and study, you know, understanding who I am and understanding the situation from a third party view. So I'll look at the situation, I'll step out of the trench of it and step on the side and look at it from an outside perspective to understand the full reality. Sometimes we all get, you know, stuck in the moment or caught up in the moment. Strategic coach and the tools that are associated with it are absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I heard you talk once about you took a Think and Grow Rich course, and you really resonated with the story of Henry Ford and the mindset of the team that he had around him. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I used to do walking lunges around the track after I got done working out. So I would do personal development, and we call it, it's called Lunge and Learn. So it's actually my mentor, Corey Gregory. He has a podcast network called the Lunge and Learn Network. And he came up with walking lunges as a substitute for traditional cardio, like a running or walking. So you could build muscle, personal development, and then, you know, get the cardio in at the same time. And he put this out there like 10 years ago, and now it's very, very well known. And I go up to a local college after a workout, and I start lunging. And he had sent me a video, thinking it was a legacy movie, Think and Grow Rich. And they tell the story of Henry Ford. You know, they called him an uneducated coward in a newspaper, whatever it was. And he sued him for $1 million. And he's getting asked these questions out of a textbook about this war, like memorization stuff. And he said, I can't answer that question, but I know that I have someone that I can hit a button and get that answer. So it wasn't the power of knowing it. It's the power of knowing that you have someone that does know it, right to the who, not how. And that just, it was a paradigm shattering confirmation that I was not crazy for always seeking out advice from other people and, you know, expanding my network and looking for the network.
Yeah. Knowing that you don't have all the answers, but finding the answers with the right people.
And like, I don't want to go to college. I don't want to go to Harvard to be an accountant or a high level finance person. I don't want to be a CFO, but I want my CFO to be that person. You know, I don't want to be the best finance person, but I want to have the best. And understanding that it's okay to not be strong in areas, there's power in that. You know, are you vulnerable? Sure. But you're not going to be the best in every area. If you try to, you're not going to be good at any of them, more than likely.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, you know, we talk about the, in business, oftentimes there's what we call the nightmare. You know, it's the thing you were dreading to hear about. You know, and we like to hear stories from fellow entrepreneurs. So, you know, early stage entrepreneurs can understand there's going to be some tough times, but we're resilient and we can make it through it. Do you have a nightmare story?
Trying to buy the company would probably be the first nightmare. you know, after we bought the company, 6 months after that, we had to let go of our vice president and controller. So me and my business partner, who came from safety and operations, and our admin assistant were running the company. And we sat down and we had a little team huddle. We said, listen, we have to make sure that AR, AP, and payroll were covered. We have to get paid. We have to pay our people and we have to pay our vendors. The rest of it will work itself out until we figure this out. So in May of 2019, we buy the company. January of 2020, we didn't have anybody, like nobody. We had a support team of outside, you know, attorneys and CPAs, but we didn't have anybody internally. So we started just figuring out what is the biggest area of need. We needed a true finance person that understood the bigger picture. So we get a fractional CFO, and then that fractional CFO helped us hire an accounting manager. And we had to completely rebuild. And in spite of our lack of, you know, education with a rebuild, let alone all the areas of need, we were putting out fires and we were still successful. And that COVID year is when we did all this, and it was the best thing to happen, that, you know, we didn't shut down or really slow down a lot, but we maintained. And it forced us internally to dissect more instead of just throwing everything at it. And then we do have good mentorship with some of our vendors, where we had people that we knew we were going to have areas of weakness, but we already had people that could replace the ones that we had. And the ones that wanted to come in and replace us were friends enough of ours or care about us enough to put that on the back burner until we figured out the other stuff. So it wasn't really a per se nightmare, but it was a very, very challenging couple of years. And then after that 2020 year, our biggest client, we had a contract negotiation with them that we had never done before. So 80% of our business at the time was under, you know, a contract negotiation. And we got beat up bad on that because we had no idea what we were doing. But looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened, because next, you know, evolution was this, you know, big picture job costing software that's very in-depth now. We roll out an operating system. So the problem wasn't really the problem. It was, how do we figure out the solution? We couldn't recognize solutions of the problem until the problem smacked us right in the mouth.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I wanted to wrap up our conversation, if you don't mind sharing. There was something really impactful I heard you talk about, and I'm wondering if you might be willing to share it. You said you had a bad day, and this particular bad day in your life has helped you to manage any other days moving forward. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about that story.
Yeah. So I call it my bad day perspective. So there's so many times in life where you wake up, you know, kind of pissed off and you're upset and, you know, all these different things happen, right? But is it really a bad day? And I had went through my whole life and I never really had a bad day, because I didn't understand what a bad day was until it came. So my best friend had cancer, and I actually just had him on my podcast the other day, and he's had stage 4 cancer for, I think, 6 or 7 years now. And, you know, they tell him all the time he should have been gone 5 years ago. And he's absolutely stubborn and resilient. But throughout his journey, he had just got rid of the cancer. He had it on his eye. He had a massive tumor on his eye. He lost eyesight, and it came back on his liver, and he had to get a very, very high-risk procedure done. So we're sitting at a little local bar having a couple beers with about 10 buddies. And I get a phone call from my wife that her brother passed away in a car accident. So it was a Sunday morning at 11 a.m. and he was just driving home and just overcorrected a little bit after going off the edge of the road. 21-year-old. He was my brother, and he died instantly. And for a couple of weeks, I really didn't know how to assess it, because I had never had something like that happen. But afterwards, you know, we started the journey. My wife was 6 months pregnant when that happened, with our first daughter. And, you know, after it happened, you know, she became a stay-at-home mom afterwards, and we started buying our pipeline right at that time. So I understood what tough looked like during this journey, because that was kind of the first, you know, big bad day I've ever had. But every day since that day has been a good day. So I don't have bad days anymore. I don't have time for bad days. It's not something that I allow to happen. I get frustrated and tired and pissed with the rest of them. But a bad day, I've had a bad day. That was a bad day, and I'll never have another bad day. Hopefully I'll never have another bad day. But that perspective has really catapulted me into a positive mindset at all times. I try to be very uplifting and charismatic and optimistic in bad situations, because I know how tough it was to even open my eyes during that situation.
Yeah.
And so I call it my bad day perspective. And I've done a little bit of, you know, conversating about it on my podcast, where when I really think about that day and what happened that day and the pain that the family went through at that point, now I live my life somewhat in memory of Mason. So I told him one night, we were sitting at a bar, and I told him, I'm going to buy this company by 30. And he's like, yeah, right, dude, whatever. And then I told him, I'm going to have the best home gym you've ever seen in 5 years. And this was a few months before he passed away. And now I have about 1,000 square foot gym, an 18 by 45 RV bay gym that I dedicated to him. And, you know, I have some like very, very historical equipment in that gym with, you know, a lot of meaning behind of it. And I dedicated the gym to them. And then, you know, last year I was supposed to do a powerlifting meet in April. And later I got hurt like 3 weeks before. The whole entire 4 a.m. crew from the old school gym was doing a powerlifting meet. And I got hurt. So I was nothing but a cheerleader when I went. And I was really angry about it kind of at first. Like, why the hell did this happen? Lo and behold, in September, there was another powerlifting meet that came up. And it was at the gym that Mason trained at. With his picture still up on the board in memory of him, I had some of his old clothes from that gym. And so I had a pair of his shoes that I put his initials on one shoe and his number on the other shoe. I deadlifted, you know, my last lift was in a shirt of his, and I did it in memory of him. And I ended up winning first place on it. And I have that trophy, his shoes and everything in my garage, you know, as a little display. And so I look at life so much differently now that I could have crumbled because of that. But now I would make him proud of what I'm doing because of that.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, every time you have a tough situation in life, it's not about the situation that really is the impact. It's about how you handle the situation. So overcoming that obstacle is what really, really can help people set themselves apart. Life's tough either way, but it's a lot tougher when you make it tough.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Absolutely.
And I love the way you term it now, bad day perspective.
That's it. Yeah.
So please, listeners, carry that story with you. And Jacob, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I'm so grateful to you for your time.
Rob, I greatly appreciate it. I think what you guys are doing with Entrepreneur Leap is absolutely commendable. So
thank you so much.
I think
much.
It's amazing. Yes, sir.
Appreciate you. And to all the amazing entrepreneurs listening today, I greatly appreciate you spending time with us, and I wish you all much love and gratitude.